He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday. It is Veterans Day. It is 11-11-2025. And as you can tell, the stock market's open today, but I think the bond market is closed. And we have a mixed open. This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. We have a bit mixed open so far to the market after a huge day yesterday. The Dow is up 75 points right now to 47,444. The NASDAQ, however, is down 144 points after a gain of over 500 yesterday. The NASDAQ sits at 23,385. The S&P is down 21 basis points right now. That's 14 points. And the S&P is at 6,808. On a quest to maybe hit 7,000 by the end of the year, we shall see. The small caps are down 35 basis points today. And with the bond market closed, there's not much action there. We're sitting at 4.12%. That's still too high, in my opinion, 4.12%. Gold has got its life back in it, and it's been in nice rally mode here. Gold is up another quarter of a percent today. It's at 4,133. Oil is rallying too. It's at 61 right now. The embattled Bitcoin market, Bitcoin is down 800 right now to 104,271. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only registered investment advisory firm, RIA, and financial planning firm with clients all across America and in most states throughout the country. We had a large day in the market yesterday on hopes that the government shutdown stalemate was ending. And last night the Senate did vote to end the stalemate as they came up with a compromise on the basically the Obamacare subsidies coming from the government. And now it is up to the House to agree get the government opened up again, hopefully in time for Thanksgiving travel, so we don't have all that red on the board at the Atlanta airport and the Dallas airport and other airports across the country. But we did have a huge day yesterday. The NASDAQ was up 522 points yesterday. Why is it down today? Well, we'll get to that in a bit. There's news on NVIDIA. I also noticed that a lot of big oil stocks yesterday, like BP and Shell and Exxon, were breaking out. They've been in sideways trends for the longest time. It's hard to get a rally in the oil sector, however, to follow through. And, you know, I wouldn't go rushing in there right now and buying those stocks, but it is encouraging to see some other areas of the market joining in on the celebration here of earnings, other than the technology stocks and some other few companies here and there from different industries. Bitcoin remains very weak in my view. It's struggling. It's fighting that $100,000 support level. It seems like any rally that it gets going is cannon fodder for selling. And until you get rid of that, it remains under pressure. I look at yesterday as a sugar high from the government shutdown progress. The market still has a fundamental multiple problem. It doesn't have multiple problems. It has a single multiple problem. And that's that forward P.E. ratio that we hit last week at 23x. And why do I say that's a problem? Because that's a five-year high. You know, 5 years ago when we hit 23X during the sugar high of COVID, 23X seems to be a top to the market for whatever reason. You know, the sellers, the buyers say, you know, I'm not buying anything here with the S&P trading at 23 times forward earnings. Keep in mind that the long-term average is more in the 19 area, so 23 is a pretty elevated number. And whether it's true, whether it will hold this time or not, but when we hit 23X back in 2021, the market backed off for several months. And when we hit 23X this past week in the market, all-time highs, the market backed off big time late in the week, especially the most inflated areas of the market, which obviously are the most vulnerable. Now, a lot of people don't want to sell this time of the year. We're in mid-November. You've got 6 weeks left. If you sell and lock in big profits here in mid-November, you're going to have to settle up with the tax man in April on those short-term capital gains or long-term capital gains, whatever the case may be. But having said that, you have to weigh that against, you know, a big correction in the market and losing those gains. Well, that solves your tax problem. You won't have taxes to pay on those gains, but you won't have gains to book either, and you'll be saying to yourself, gee, I wish I would have booked some of those gains while things were way up there. I'm sure Bitcoin investors are saying that. Do we have Barry on the line yet? He was having some... Oh, he's on hold. Okay. We'll pick him up in the second quarter of the show. But a lot of those people had Bitcoin at $125,000 not too long ago. You see the mentality and the sentiment and the thinking. All of that, coulda, woulda, shoulda, I could have sold at $125,000 and now we're down here at $104,000. I wonder if I should be selling now. Well, that's all part of investing, and that same dilemma hits everybody, whether you own Rocket Labs or whether you own NVIDIA or whether you own Palantir. You know, on the one hand, you've earned some big, big gains in the market this year, especially since April of this year. Holy cow, what a run we've had in the S&P 500 from 4,800 to 6,800, and the NASDAQ with huge gains since April of this year. One of the greatest buying opportunities in my lifetime, and I called it. I said the tariffs are going to work. Here we are at 4,800. It's time to go all in the market, and certainly has been quite a ride. Now we're at a different area of the market. We're at 6,800. We've gone from 4,800 to 6,800, which brings in all those questions. Should I lock in some profits here? Well, I've always said it, and I'll say it again, it comes down to the stock and the position that you own. I look at my positions every single day, every one of them. I pay a little visit. And sometimes I just say, you know what? I think I've gotten about as much as I can get out of this position. It's exceeded all of my expectations. We had a double in the stock in 3 months, okay? And sometimes you have to say to yourself, that's a gift from God, you know. I mean, that is too good to be true. That doesn't happen very often. It takes years sometimes to get a double in a stock, and there's nothing wrong with saying I'm going to walk away from it, and I'm going to pay the capital gains if I'm in a taxable situation, a taxable portfolio, and be grateful. And no sour grapes if the market doubles again. Well, I gotta wonder about SoftBank. If you haven't seen the news, SoftBank unloaded their entire position in NVIDIA. Now, I don't know. I mean, SoftBank is domiciled in Japan. I don't know what their capital gains taxes are like. But the CEO of SoftBank decided, for whatever reasons, I don't agree with him, but he felt like it was time to cash in on NVIDIA. He obviously doesn't see a favorable risk-to-reward ratio going forward. And, of course, you have Michael Burry, who earlier this month, a couple weeks ago, maybe a week ago, went even further than that and put in a short position on NVIDIA. Whether or not he still has it or not, we don't know. I think he does. I personally think NVIDIA is still a very good holding. I think NVIDIA, which is now at $4.5 trillion, it's been over five. I think you're going to see a much higher stock 3 to 5 years from now based on earnings, based on numbers, not which way the wind is blowing or what I feel inside or whatever. It's based on numbers. The numbers would support a much higher price on NVIDIA going forward. And, of course, the risk to that really is in the form of competition. Does somebody come along with a chip that can do what NVIDIA can do at a much lower price? Well, that nobody has done that yet. We'll be right back. That's the Best Stocks Now show. A lot to talk about today. A lot of individual stocks to talk about.
I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, now it's up to the House to pass the bill that the Senate passed last night that does not include the continuation of the subsidies to the soaring cost of the Obamacare program, which is set to double. Premiums are set to double next year without those government subsidies, okay? And the government subsidies were not meant to be there. They were put in during COVID to ease the pain, and now we're finding out that the whole system really needs to be retooled. And, Barry, I would just suggest that, I mean, you got some pretty sharp business people in the current administration. It seems to me like they could come up, figure it out, a better plan than what's out there now, because it seems like the current plan is destined to just really... I mean, the average cost now for healthcare, $26,000 for an individual per year, with most of that being borne by the employer. Something's got to give.
Well, and the thought process is, you know, where we are with in terms of, you know, technological history, where we are medically, you would think that our health would get better collectively, right, over the years. Versus less healthy. But I mean, you know, I think just, you know, it's a system that's really been, you know, I mean, it's really been broken for an extended period of time. There's been no, you know, willingness really from either side in terms of, you know, kind of fixing it. I mean, you know, no one's really came with, you know, great ideas in terms of how to fix it. I do think, I mean, you know, I do think, you know, having access to these GLP-1 type drugs can, you know, could really bend that cost curve a bit, right? You know, potentially
from
a health standpoint. But
put everybody on a GLP-1 drug. I said the
And there's a lot of fraud. I mean, there's fraud and other things. Certainly, you know, I think Doge uncovered at least, you know, if it didn't unmask some of that stuff, it at least kind of, you know, shed some light on it. But, you know, I do think collectively, if we can improve, you know, our health, whether it's our kids' health, you know, our generation, the generation before, you know, after us or what, if we can improve our health, we can certainly change and bend that cost curve.
Yes. And I said $26,000 for individual. That's per family. The average cost per family is $26,933, $20,000 paid by employers, and $6,850 contributed by employees. So it's creating a real dilemma here. And it's going to stifle, you know, small business creation. It's going to stifle self-employment, right? Because you have to go out and pay for it yourself. And that's where most of those people that were getting the subsidies reside. So it was a real issue. And let's hope they can get together and come up with some solutions to this really terrible problem. Okay, and the other one that Trump's been tweeting about, He says paying back the tariffs would be a $2 trillion national security disaster. And, of course, we're waiting for the decision from the Supreme Court on whether or not the tariffs, went around the Constitution, which I'm all for staying within the Constitution. Was it unconstitutional? Can they justify, can they use another, act or whatever to justify the tariffs? I don't know. But that decision is still hanging out there, and it's hanging over the heads of the market, along with that 23x forward PE ratio, Barry, which I think is a pretty formidable ceiling right now in the market. I mentioned in the first quarter that I thought yesterday we saw a little bit of a sugar high in the market with the NASDAQ up over 500. But the reality doesn't go away that, we're hitting 22.88 today forward P.E. ratio of the market. Now, the earnings are there. There's no question. 13.5% growth in earnings quarter over the last same quarter last year is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. But it's the price that we're paying for those earnings right now that's a little bit troublesome. How about a 50-year mortgage?
Well, and as you've been warning, by the way,
yes.
I mean that speculative end. I mean, you can look at names like CoreWeave today, some of the quantum names.
Yes.
And it's just any hiccup in earnings. If things aren't perfect, names are getting punished, especially on that longer term end, like you've mentioned.
And we have backed out of those areas substantially. Pulled back into the middle of the harbor, more or less, than those far tributaries, where a lot of people remain and just watch them get wasted away, and watch big sell-offs in that area of the market. I just wouldn't be in that area of the market right now. What about a 50-year mortgage? Did you see that being thrown around yesterday? I mean, it's serious.
Whatever.
It's not just being thrown around. But it would double the interest pay. You know how much would go towards interest over a 50-year period of time. But obviously it would lower that monthly payment. And Federal Housing Finance Agency Director Bill Pulte calls it a complete game changer in making home ownership more affordable. I kind of am for it, to be honest. I think, you're paying rent, all right? Why not instead? I remember buying my first home. I put down 20%, had very little skin in the game, but it got the ball rolling towards building equity. I mean, you're several years into it before you really start accumulating principal and ownership and making principal payments. But you can fudge those principal payments. You can add a little bit here and there to principal payments to shorten the life of the mortgage as you go. I don't know. It may be something that it would lower. It says on a $400,000 home with the 10% down payment and a 6.25% mortgage rate, your payments would be $250 less per month, okay? But interest payments, $250 per month. Okay, $250.
For 20 more years? Oh,
yeah.
Man.
But the interest payments over the course of the loan would be $816,000 on a $400,000 home compared to $438,000 for a 30-year loan.
Can they make a house that lasts 50 years nowadays? I mean, that's the other. I don't know.
Build it out of antimony or something. I don't know.
Materials. Yeah, materials are not what they used to be.
No.
I'll tell you that much.
Well, you have some astronauts from China that hit some debris in space. I don't know if it was an Elon Musk satellite, but that's becoming a big problem. They've got to send up a rescue crew to try to get them. Maybe they can send up some of those X-Peen human-like robots, which are all the rage right now. They say it's a better robot than Tesla's robots, X-P-E-V. We'll be right back.
Just don't understand anymore. Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show. Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. We've got Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner. Okay, let's look at SoftBank here for a minute. SoftBank unloads its entire stake in NVIDIA for $5.8 billion, okay? And I think SoftBank, let's see, the SoftBank's market cap these days, we'll figure out what percent, I want to say it was about a 2% overall holding. It wasn't a large holding. I would say that SoftBank, in a way, kind of missed the big move in NVIDIA. SoftBank's market cap right now is $219 billion. So $5.8 billion works out to about a 2% overall position. They unload the whole thing. Okay, any thoughts behind why they would unload their entire position, Barry? And then I'll give my thoughts.
Yeah, they actually, it was interesting this morning on the speculation. You know, obviously, like you mentioned on the back of the Michael Burry news from last week, from the short side of NVIDIA, and of course, you know, was looking into them deeper. They've owned this stock a number of times. Not the first time they've sold, you know, liquidated their position there. Also, they came out with, there's either usually two reasons, right? One is that they're going to, you know, use that capital for some other investment. The second is, they don't like the stock, and so the market kind of anticipated initially that they didn't like the stock. Well, I believe SoftBank actually came out and said that it was really a cash raising, capital raising reason as to why they sold the position.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, as you said, as a percentage of SoftBank, but even more importantly, as a percentage of NVIDIA's stock, it's a very, very, you know, small position. I mean, $5 billion is a lot to us, but it's not necessarily a lot to, and a lot to SoftBank too, but not necessarily a lot to NVIDIA.
No, they also disclosed they had a big position in T-Mobile. I knew there was a big seller in T-Mobile in October. I didn't know who it was. But
you can see it on the chart.
I can see it in the charts. And I wrote on my chart, who's the big seller this month here? And it was SoftBank, right? But you know, I disagree with Burry and I disagree with SoftBank. And they have their own agenda and their own reasons for doing it. But I still think NVIDIA, you have now the $1 trillion baby club is now 10 stocks. And I'm writing an article about halfway through it as to who I believe will be the next member of the $1 trillion club. Berkshire Hathaway is number 10. They just passed the $1 trillion mark. And, of course, NVIDIA is at the top of the heap at $4.5 trillion. Apple's second at $3 trillion. And I believe there's a stock that is on the cusp of entering into that $1 trillion baby club, and I'll disclose that in my article that I publish when I get it done and over to Seeking Alpha, who the 11th member will be. And I don't know, maybe we'll call it the Elect 11, right? You've got to have we've got the Magnificent right. Seven and the Fab Five or the Fab Four or whatever it is. I'll call it the Elect 11, but I think there's definitely one that's going to be entering here soon. SoftBank has really had a mixed record over the last decade. They've underperformed the S&P 500. And if it weren't for this past 12 months where they've had a phenomenal run, and I don't know what's driven their phenomenal run. I think maybe Palantir and a few others. But they've underperformed the S&P 500, even though they're investing in startups, they're investing in private companies.
COVID kind of helped them. Yeah, COVID kind of helped bring them back. Didn't they have a big investment in ARM? I think they almost kind of went all in.
That's kind of the one that really saved their bacon is they took ARM private, which is a private was a private company out of the UK, big semiconductor chip stock, and then they brought it back public, and that was, I think, probably carried a lot of weight for them. But really, they've had a mixed record over the years, so I wouldn't give too much weight. That is, I think, what's weighing on the NASDAQ and the AI stocks in general today. But I wouldn't pay a lot of attention to that. I go to my five-year valuations, and you can look it up on the Best Stocks Now app and see where I'm at right now. And I'm using very conservative numbers. You know, obviously the risk to NVIDIA is somebody coming along like Huawei might be, you know, a major possibility, or even Alibaba. I would say those are the two that are most likely to come up with a chip similar to and cheaper to NVIDIA's chip. But for now, I mean, they still have the commanding position in that space, and I don't plan on selling it. It is still our largest holding at Gunderson Capital, although it's
well,
not.
Well, you mentioned, yeah, you mentioned Berkshire at 10th. You see the news yesterday from Warren Buffett. I guess he's going to speeding up some of, you know, giving away some of his money to his, you know, to his kids' trust. And also he said he's going to, you know, basically be going quiet. So he's not going to be speaking at the, you know, at the annual, you know, meeting. He's not going to, you know, kind of be doing his, you know, kind of annual letters and things anymore. So kind of an end of an era when the news, you know, kind of official end of an era when the news came out yesterday.
Yeah, definitely. The Oracle of Omaha, no more will we hear from him. Okay, there's a couple interesting. I noticed this one caught my eye today. General Electric reports a 9.2% stake in Beta Technologies. I never heard of Beta Technologies. I looked into Beta Technologies. It recently went public, and it is an aerospace. It's a, you know, it's a vertical.
Oh, that's the vertical landing takeoff one,
yes.
I think. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know the shape of it. It's got kind of three fan-looking fans, kind of propellers inside of it, but it also is you know, shaped like a true plane.
Well, I think you got to sit up and take notice when GE purchased 1.47 million shares in the IPO for an investment of $50 million. Now, they're in the same space as Archer Aviation. I can't think. There's about four, Joby Aviation. There's about four or five in there. I know that Kathy Wood is a big investor in Archer Aviation. Archer bought an airport out in the Los Angeles area in Hawthorne. It's all you got to do is go for a drive on the 405 freeway at about 3 in the afternoon, 4 in the afternoon, and you could see where these robo-taxis and vertical aircraft could come in handy some days. But the price is still, and the logistics of it all are still a big issue. So anyways, Beta goes public. I looked up, go to their website, beta.team. It's www.beta.team, and there's a picture of their craft, of their landing craft. And, you know, I just, that gives it a lot, for me, that gives it a lot of credibility for Larry Culp at GE to go in there and make a purchase. Now, on the overall scale of things, that's way out there on the curve. That's that tributary way out there that gets water only during a king tide in the market.
Yeah.
And when the water drains, it's the first to go. But a little bit in your hip pocket, I'm sure that's the way Larry Culp looks at it. And by the way, GE stock has been performing extremely well here lately. It's one of the stocks in our premier growth portfolio. The other one that's been catching my eye, MP Materials pulled back over the last couple weeks with the sell-off in rare earth and all this and that, and the one-year time frame that China's going to continue to supply us. But I would just say that it's the most promising, and it gets credibility by, number one, an investment by the government in it, MP Materials, and an investment by Apple in the rare earth mine, which is on the California-Nevada border. I also see that today Deutsche Bank raised it. Now, here's the key term, long-term thematic play on fundamental value. And we know that the rare earths, we've got to ramp that up. We've got to solve that supply chain issue. We've got kind of a one-year time frame. China's being real stingy. They're only allowing five of the major rare earths to be sold out of their country. NMP is probably one of our most promising, along with a few others. I also saw that U.S. Antimony, which I've got a cube of antimony sitting on my desk here, got a five-year commitment from a major industrial customer. So that's UAMY, and also MP is MP Materials. We'll be right back. We'll talk about CoreWeave a little bit when we come back.
You got it.
Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. And I'm going to tell a little story here, Barry, on CoreWeave, okay? It's a crazy one. It doesn't happen very often, but sometimes things fall in your lap that work out real nicely. Okay, we're going to go back. Let's see. CoreWeave came public. I'm going to bring up my Market Surge, they call it these days, chart, a one-year chart of CoreWeave. CoreWeave came public back on towards the end of March at around $45 a share, okay? And they provide a cloud platform built for scaling, hyperscaling, supporting and accelerating generative AI, which is a sweet spot in the market, obviously. And that's all I knew. There was a lot of hoopla around this CoreWeave offering of them, the IPO, the CoreWeave IPO. There was a lot of anticipation. Company's actually headquartered in Livingston, New Jersey. Not exactly the AI capital of the world, but nevertheless, that's where it was, and they did go public. Actually, they IPO'd at $40 per share. I didn't know that much about it until I actually saw a one-year chart. Obviously, it hasn't been around for 1 year, but I can pull up on day one. Like this one that GE invested in already has a chart on Market Surge, even though it's only been public for about 5 or 6 days. That was the, what was the name of the stock I just named about that GE's investing in? I can't think of the name of it right now. But anyways, CoreWeave.
Oh, Beta. Beta.
Yeah, Beta. Okay. And the symbol is Beta, B-E-T-A. Okay, so CoreWeave goes public in late March, and the first thing I saw that made my eyeballs pop out, I look at those quarterly earnings, sales and earnings, which are at the bottom of the chart. Very handy. I always show this in my workshops. This is current earnings growth or lack thereof or sales growth. And I saw sales growth of 934% year over year, 544% in Q2, 420%. Those are eye-popping numbers in sales. No earnings yet. But generally speaking, when you've got sales growth like that, eventually you're going to start hitting that bottom line and start accumulating earnings. And so I said, this is something to sit up and take notice of. And we actually bought it on May the 5th. So it had only been public for about 6 to 7 weeks when those numbers, I said, and it was a time, think about what was going on around that period of time. There was the bubble, I mean, the accumulation began on April the 8th in the NASDAQ. We had called the bottom on the NASDAQ on April the 8th, the very bottom, S&P 4800, and we were looking for stocks like this that were in the center of the AI boom, and we bought many. And we bought CoreWeave in our ultra growth portfolio on May the 5th, okay? Well, on May the 23rd, 18 days after we purchased it, Barry, it was up 94%. It had gone, we purchased it at $52.51, and it was trading at $101.84. And we sold, not all of it, I sold half of my position for a 94% profit in 18 days. Okay, normally to get a 93% profit takes a few years, right? To get it in 18 days, I said, you know, I think it's prudent to take half off the table right here. And book the profits. That means the stock that you have remaining, you have basically is your gravy, right? Well, it went on to go up another $50 per share. From there, it went to from 101 to 158. We now had a triple in our original shares that we had no cost basis in because it was the gravy that we scooped off. And on June the 26th, just 7 weeks after we bought it, we sold the remaining half for a triple, a 201% profit. Now, you could say you should have held on to your entire position, Bill. You would have tripled that investment. Instead, you doubled on half of it, and you tripled on the other half of it. Well, okay, yes, hindsight is 20/20, but I have no qualms about selling that stock and taking a huge profit 18 days after I bought it. I know it's a short-term gain, but look, if you would have held on and owned it today, you'd have given up all of those gains. Because today, CoreWeave, we sold our last batch of CoreWeave at $101.
It was
$158. Okay, yeah. So where is CoreWeave today? CoreWeave is at 91. Okay, it did go up to 187 at one time. That was the high. But after we sold it at 158, it got cut in half. All right? I mean, so you would have given up half your profit right there. And then it fooled around in the 150 area. Today it's at 91, okay? So we'd be back. We'd have an 80% profit overall if we'd have never done anything. But we booked a 100% and a 200%, both short-term profits. And the stock has really done not much ever since. And now they reported their earnings. Their sales were up 200%. It's not the 900, the 500, the 400. Now it's 200. Their sales tripled. But they still are losing money. They lost 8 cents per share. They have failed to turn a profit yet. And now the stock's trading at $91. It's down 13.3% today. So that's just my lesson on CoreWeave. We've had no interest in the stock ever since. It was like, man, I saw this at the right time. We made a huge profit, and I've just been watching it and waiting for it maybe to become profitable again someday. So there you have it. There's our story on CWRV, along with all the other stories we told today on the Best Stocks Now show. Thanks for listening. To get a 4-week trial to the newsletter, the app, the live trades, go to GundersonCapital.com. To get an appointment with us on management of your portfolios, 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST, or GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.